Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The Fan is on your smart speaker. To listen to the home of New York sports, just say, "Hey Siri, play WFAN."
Welcome back to The Fan. Lori Rubenson here with you. And a lot going on with NBA free agency, and maybe nowhere is there a team that is more in the middle of what's going on in NBA free agency, trade season, everything, than the Brooklyn Nets. To talk about the Nets, the Knicks, and the NBA, we bring in Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, co-host of the Crossover podcast. Hey, Howard, how are you?
I'm doing well, Lori. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So I saw an article on SI.com. It was you and your colleagues and kind of weighing in on the Brooklyn Nets and their big three and the demise of it and where it went wrong. And so let's start with that, with the Nets, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, this big three. And in your opinion, I think I saw your answer was sort of like everything went wrong. But if you had to pick, what was, you know, if you had to pick one thing and say that was the beginning of the end, or that was the really the crux of the problem of why this didn't work, what would that be?
There are a lot of reasons. Obviously, none of these situations that are as complex as this are ever about any one thing. But, you know, if you're going to look back at 2019, three Julys ago, mm-hmm. when the Nets were celebrating this incredible free agent coup of getting Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in tandem at a time when certainly the Knicks wanted them and it cleared all kinds of cap room, yep. to chase them. And any number of teams, at a minimum, were chasing Kevin Durant, whether or not they would want the tandem, almost immaterial. You couldn't get one without the other. And the Nets happily accepted that. At some point along the way, they got, as I would term it, kind of greedy and made the Harden deal too. Where did it all go wrong to the point where today we're talking about, obviously, Harden already long gone, and one or both of Kyrie and KD are going to be out the door sometime soon? You know, in the final analysis, I would say if we're, you know, making the pie chart, Kyrie Irving is a very, very large part of that pie chart. There are other issues. There are other factors. There's a lot of things that tripped up the Nets over the last 3 years, and especially over the last 12 months. But Kyrie Irving's a huge piece of this pie chart, because if you're going to ask why Kevin Durant wants out, and that itself is a complex answer, but why does he want out? Well, in large part because last season was a disaster. Mm-hmm. Why was last season a disaster? Bunch of reasons, but biggest of them was Kyrie Irving wasn't available for most of it because he refused the COVID vaccine, and that pretty much derailed them from the beginning. And it also was a huge factor in why James Harden eventually wanted out himself and was traded in February. So, you know, from there, disastrous season. After that, then it's the Nets reacting to the fact that Kyrie Irving has not been reliable for the time that he's been with them. So now they're trying to, you know, just try to hold him accountable, mm-hmm. through this contract negotiation that went sideways. And in doing so, they ticked off Kyrie, and a ticked off Kyrie meant a ticked off Kevin Durant, because that's his friend. So on the one hand, Kevin Durant is upset with the way things went last season. On the other hand, he's upset with the way they're handling Kyrie, and Kyrie's the one who was responsible for a lot of what went wrong last season. So trying to make heads or tails of that is the hard part.
Well, now I'm going to ask you one that's maybe even a little harder, which is, what did we learn, if anything, from this situation? If you were advising an NBA GM, and in terms of this balance of power of NBA stars who seem to have the ability to determine which teams they're going to, who they're playing with, all of this, if you were an NBA general manager, how would you look at the Nets as a cautionary tale, and what could you learn from it or do differently? Or are you powerless because you need stars and you just have to succumb?
It's a great question, Laurie, and it is I think it's a defining question of this era, because we are in an era, we often talk about player empowerment. It's really superstar empowerment.
Right.
You know, the guy signing the mid-level exception is not, you know, empowered the way that Kevin Durant or LeBron James are. So there's that, and there's also the fact that there are more forced trades by stars in this era than at any time in NBA history. The NBA gets defensive about this, and Adam Silver got defensive about it when I asked him about it All-Star Weekend. But the bottom line is, yes, okay, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, once upon a time, many, many moons ago, did force his way from Milwaukee to L.A., but it was the exception and not the rule. It's now the rule. It now happens multiple times every season for the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It has become the new normal. So when you ask, and it's a great question, when you ask what's the cautionary tale, or what's the lesson of this cautionary tale, how should GMs and team owners proceed from here? I don't know that there's an easy answer there. I would say, off the top of my head, one, you got to build a really strong rapport with the star you just signed. If you are fortunate enough to have landed one of these guys, whether through the draft, through free agency, through trade, build a rapport and a trust and a relationship so that if things go sideways at some point with the team, with the roster, or in this case, with your best buddy who has been completely unreliable, so we got to do something about him. And if you – I'm not saying that Sean Marks and Joe Tsai, the Nets owner, are – did not try this. I don't know how they would define their own relationship with Kevin Durant. But I have to believe that if you have a strong relationship with Durant, then you can navigate the thorny thicket that you are dealing with when you're trying to hold Kyrie Irving accountable without alienating Durant, right? Like, you should be able to do that. And Durant himself should understand that, because Kyrie cost him a season at minimum. And lest we forget, it's not just this past season when he refused the shot. It's the previous season when Kyrie Irving just bailed for 2 weeks for reasons that remain unclear, and then violated COVID protocols to boot by going to some family events and was on camera. Like, there's just been one thing after another with him. So, you know, have the relationship with your star so that you can navigate difficult situations. That would be one. The other is that really you're powerless. I mean, that part of it is true. Ultimately, if a superstar in this era of the NBA wants out for whatever reason, they probably are going to be able to do it. They can make you uncomfortable. And the fact is, like, okay, you could call, it's not really a bluff, but you could, you know, say, Kevin Durant, look, we understand you're upset. We know you want to be traded. We can't find a deal that satisfies what we need. So we're just going to hold on to you, and we expect you here to open training camp in late September. He could do what Ben Simmons did and just not show up and say, fine, withhold the money. I'll challenge it later. Maybe I win, maybe I don't. But I've made hundreds of millions in my career, and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I don't think Kevin Durant would do that. He loves basketball too much. I couldn't see him just burning a season, sacrificing a season the way that Ben Simmons just did. Durant loves the game too much to do that. He has more professional pride than that. But that being the case, not insignificant here, if Kevin Durant were to come back to the Nets, one of his teammates is, of course, Ben Simmons, who just willfully burned a year of his career. Maybe that might be weighing on him, too. I'm only speculating. But, yeah, it's tough. When you're in the Nets position, there's not a whole lot of things you can do other than just either try to ride it out and see what happens or find the right trade.
Talking to Howard Beck about the NBA, about Kevin Durant and the Nets. And so you started to go to this place, which I'm also fascinated by, which is the concept of leverage and who has it. And so, as you said, the Nets could, I suppose, wait around and see with Kevin Durant, and Durant can potentially sit out all of this. Well, I guess let's start with what are you hearing, and where do you think Durant most wants to go? We're hearing the Suns, we're hearing New Orleans. Is there another sleeper team out there? What are you hearing by way of rumor?
The Suns and the Heat are the teams that he'd like to go to, but that doesn't mean that that's where he'll end up. We've seen many versions of this over the last several years where a guy says, I want out, and the team is not obligated to make the deal that's best for the player. They're obligated to make the deal that's best for themselves, get the best possible return. That said, you ask about leverage. When the Nets are canvassing the league for offers, and it doesn't end with the Heat and Suns, right? They're going to be talking to Toronto. They're going to be talking to New Orleans. Those are two teams that both have the ability to make a trade and still have enough left to support Kevin Durant and make a run. If they find a deal that works for them with, say, New Orleans, or let's say, somewhere off the usual map of where NBA stars are trying to force their way, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say it was Minnesota. If Kevin Durant signals to the Timberwolves, I don't want to come there, I will not be happy there, I don't think the Timberwolves are going to make that deal.
Right.
I think that, his voice has to be in this. He's not part of the discussion about trade parameters, but he's going to have a say in this, because no other team is going to want to put themselves in the position that the Nets are in right now, which is to have an unhappy Kevin Durant saying, I don't want to be there. Find me a new home. So it's not as clean as just, well, they'll just make the deal that's best for them. In the past in the NBA, I think that was more the case, not today and not with this player.
So then, if you are the Nets and Sean Marks, what is quote-unquote sort of fair or good return for Kevin Durant? We just saw Rudy Gobert get traded from Utah to Minnesota for 4 first-round draft picks, plus this year's first-round actual human, so that's like 5 first-round draft picks. What would be Kevin Durant's about to turn 34 in September. What's a fair return for Durant?
It's a tough one to ascertain. And it's less about, well, what should you pay for one of the whatever top 10, 12, 13 players in NBA history, which is what Kevin Durant is, still one of the best players in the game today. It's not so much about what you and I think his value is and how many picks you and I think, or how many all-stars you and I think you should get. It's really about some weird, undefinable combination of factors that determine market value.
Yep.
How many teams are in the running? What do they have to offer? And who can outbid whom? And is that team that has the best offer also a team that Kevin Durant will signal that he's going to be happy going to?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really complicated. You'd like to think he's going to get a bigger return than Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert, really nice player, multiple time, all-star and all-NBA and defensive player of the year, all those things. He ain't Kevin Durant. On the other hand, he is much younger than Kevin Durant and has not ruptured an Achilles
right, as
Kevin Durant has. And I know people are focusing more on what Kevin Durant has done the last 2 years. He's played like an MVP when he's played, but he's also missed a ton of games because he keeps getting hurt. And that's what happens when you come back from an Achilles. Like, yes, he has come all the way back. Yes, he has been essentially as dominant as he was before, but in fewer games. And he's going to turn, as you mentioned, 34 in September. I think that has to factor in too. Teams are probably, as much as every team in the league would love to have Kevin Durant, before you give up your entire core or all your picks for the next, half decade, you have to at least factor in how many dominant MVP-level years of Kevin Durant do we think we're going to get? And even within those seasons, is he going to play 50, 60 games? He's probably not getting to 70 again. So it's complicated. But, ideally, all the first-round picks and all the first-round pick swaps you can possibly extract, plus at least one stud young player.
Yeah, and which is why a team like, as you mentioned, teams like the Pelicans and the Raptors and others, those three teams match up well, better than some of the other destinations he'd like to go to. All right, so Now let's talk about the other player the Nets have and need to trade, and that's Kyrie Irving. And all the rumors are that it will be that Kyrie wants to go to the Lakers, and that LeBron James, who is the de facto at least assistant GM of the Lakers, wants Kyrie there. If you're the Nets, why would you? Do you have to take back Russell Westbrook, and what would it take? Like, why would you do the deal? What does it take for you to want to get involved with this deal?
The Nets don't want Russell Westbrook. Nobody really wants Russell Westbrook at this stage,
right.
And very few teams would want Kyrie Irving either. But this is another case, as we've seen occasionally in NBA history, modern times, of people trying to offload or trade their problems for each other. If the Nets and Lakers, the Lakers are the only team I know of. The only team I know of, and probably the only team, period. I don't think there's any team that I don't know. I mean, you know, there's plenty I don't know. But I do not imagine, and I have not heard from anybody around the league, that there is anybody else who really wants Kyrie Irving. The Lakers want him. The Lakers need him. They're the only team that's really desperate enough to need him right now. And the only way to get him really is to trade Russell Westbrook. They're not trading Anthony Davis, and they're not trading LeBron James, and there's no combination of their other players, either salary-wise or talent-wise, that would even make sense. It has to be Westbrook. The Nets don't want Westbrook. Westbrook doesn't fit with Ben Simmons, assuming that they're going to keep Ben Simmons.
Can you imagine, by the way, for just a second, like the shooting out there with Simmons and Westbrook on the court together?
Exactly. One of many reasons why they would not do this. But as a just simple matter of practicality, it's the only way to do it. Can you involve a third team so that Westbrook lands somewhere else and the Nets get other assets out of it? Are the Lakers going to be willing to put in the, I think, requisite two future first-round picks
mm-hmm.
for the Nets to want to do it? And besides that, there's also a salary difference. The Nets have to throw in like another $8 to $10 million in salary, which means another good player or two, just to make this work under the cap. So it's complicated. And if the Nets couldn't involve a third team to offload Westbrook, I think he ends up getting bought out. There's no way they're going to keep him. He doesn't make sense in a Ben Simmons centric Nets team once they're moving off of Kyrie and Kevin Durant. So it is complicated. I don't know if there's a third team out there to absorb Westbrook, and if that team would even keep him either. I have a feeling that one way or another, he's going to be getting bought out from somebody sometime in the next 3 to 6 months. And we'll see where his career goes from there.
I don't know. Yeah, weird idea. Sam Presti and Oak City using their cap space. You never know. And getting an acquiring pick somehow. But yes, I'm with you. I think that it's probably the Lakers where Kyrie Irving ends up. All right, let's switch to the Knicks. And the Knicks, did you like the deal and what the Knicks have been doing in signing Jalen Brunson?
I like the Jalen Brunson deal. I don't like a lot of what preceded it. Mm-hmm. They had to go to incredible lengths. Like the lengths that they went to in terms of offloading salaries and players and picks and giving up the 11th pick in the recent draft, doing all of this just to make the room to get a player who is not an all-star, who probably will never be an all-star. That's not a knock. That's just, he's a really, really good player, and he's an important player. And I like the acquisition of Jalen Brunson for the Knicks. They gave up a lot just to clear the cap room to get him. And normally, if you're going to go through those kinds of contortions in this league to create cap room, it's to chase stars. I'm making an exception on that rule for the Knicks because they haven't had a reliable point guard since forever. It's obviously a really important position, needless to say. And they didn't have any other great avenues, I think, to get somebody in that spot. They have some interesting young players, chiefly RJ Barrett. And without a steady point guard to organize the offense, to make plays, to settle things down, to just be this hub and this leader, everything else is harder. So you're never going to see the best of Barrett if you don't have a steady playmaker next to him. They made this big investment in Julius Randle after he has that breakout all NBA season. And then he just regresses by, 80%. Well, any hope you have of getting of rehabbing Julius Randle, again, having a strong, steady point guard who will say, no, 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 Julius, it's not, ain't your turn. Like, I'm going to run the offense. If the offense keeps running through Julius Randle, then Randle's just going to keep shooting bad shots and taking contested shots. Having a strong point guard, I think, is important for all those reasons. Plus, high character guy, really likable guy. My friends in Dallas, from the moment Brunson got there, were always raving about him. Everybody loves Jalen Brunson. Solid guy, solid leader, plays both sides of the ball, and can break down a defense and can get his shot and is a good three-point shooter. We saw what he did for a few games against Utah when Luka was out. Will he be as effective without Luka next to him for most of the season? Like, you know, by most of the season, I mean, we saw the three games without him against Utah, but, you know, that's a really tiny sample size. Can he be that guy, right? He benefited from being by Luka for most of his career. I just think that that's the question. Or is it going to be too much for him because he doesn't have that kind of talent around him in New York? But you got to start somewhere. And I think he's a good signing.
Yeah, I said earlier in the show when I came on that if it was another team, I might grade it differently. But with the Knicks, I grade on a curve. And it's at least a positive move. Is when you look at Gobert being traded by the Jazz, do you expect Donovan Mitchell to be traded? I know they're saying they're going to build around Mitchell now, but, you know, if you're looking for if the Knicks are now looking, all right, they have Brunson. Can they be a destination for a star player that wants to force his way out? Is there a possibility that that is Donovan Mitchell?
So there's been mixed signals about whether the Jazz are ready to move off of Donovan Mitchell as well. And part of that might be that, hey, look, you know, you made a pretty dramatic move in deciding to break up this all-star duo of Mitchell and Gobert. That's a pretty big concession. They got a great package back. And, you know, maybe you sit back, take a beat or two and say, you know, all right, how do we feel about where we are? Do we want to work as hard as possible to make this a respectable team around Donovan Mitchell with everything that we just got? Can we redirect some of these players or these picks to get other help? How long does that take? Or are you better off just blowing it all the way up? I could make the case either way. Ultimately, though, it's what does Danny Ainge think is the right path here? I think there's a chance Donovan Mitchell's available. I think that there's a chance the Jazz are just taking a pause here before they decide to start entertaining those offers and weighing all that. Wouldn't surprise me in the least, in large part because, one, I don't think it's that easy to rebuild on the fly like that around him, and the Jazz were only they were good, they were fine, but they were never truly a contender. How long is it going to take to build that back up to be a contender with him, and will he be patient enough? I don't know if he will. And there's certainly a market for him out there. So, you know, it won't surprise me in the least if they decide to trade Mitchell as well. The thing with the Knicks and Mitchell is, like, that would be a pretty undersized backcourt, right? Like, if you thought you were going to get Donovan Mitchell, I don't think you go and get Jalen Brunson. I think you spend that money differently. I think you manage your cap and your roster differently if you thought you were going to get Donovan Mitchell. Does that mean you take yourself out of the running for Mitchell if suddenly he becomes available? I mean, it's a hard thing. Like, that'd be an undersized backcourt, a defensively challenged backcourt, even though Brunson's a good defender, Mitchell is not. And, you know, Jalen Brunson chose New York over Dallas for all kinds of reasons, including family, right? His father is an assistant coach now with the Knicks, and Leon Rose, who runs the Knicks, was, you know, once, you know, Jalen Brunson's agent. His Jalen Brunson's agent is Leon Rose's son. Like, there's all these family ties. Plus, he wanted to have his own team to run instead of playing second fiddle to Luka. Well, you bring in Donovan Mitchell, suddenly you're saying, oh, sorry, Jalen, taking the ball out of your hands and handing it to Donovan Mitchell. I'm not sure that makes the most sense, and I don't think that's necessarily the Knicks' highest upside play, but not every day you can acquire an all-star either. Do they have the assets to get him? That's the other major question, and I'm not sure if that's the case. If Mitchell's available, I think other teams can make better offers.
All right, last one before I let you go is one that I was scratching my head a lot of this for the second part of the season on, and that is, Is there, you know, we know that Knicks head coach Tom Thibodeau, obviously Leon Rose was his agent. They're very close. That's why, you know, part of why they are together. Leon Rose, of course, the president of the Knicks. But when the Knicks went out and traded a first-round pick for Cam Reddish, as a young player who, you know, apparently had they thought had some upside, they wanted to see what they had there, only for Tibbs to keep him on the bench and not really give him much of a look. Is there some sort of a disconnect between Tibbs and the front office in terms of the young players and player development?
The biggest concern I've had about the Knicks and the way they've made decisions over the last couple of years since Leon Rose took over is I don't think they have a clear vision, both in what they've stated, which is not much because Leon Rose never speaks, but also in what they've done. I think their direction has been kind of confused. And I think even in hiring Tibbs is a win now coach. When Leon Rose took over, this was essentially kind of, you know, was some version of a rebuild,
yep.
Right? Like, he didn't have much. He wasn't taking over much. Tibbs is not a rebuilding coach. Tibbs is a win now coach. And you knew he was going to get the most out of them, at least in year one. And he did. And they overachieved and they made the playoffs. And then they regressed mightily because they overachieved. I mean, that was a thing that cuts both ways. So now you've got this win now coach. You've got all these young players. You've got, you know, Quickly, who you're high on, and Obi Toppin, and then you bring in Cam Reddish. And no, he's still playing, you know, Derrick Rose until he gets hurt. And he's playing Taj Gibson. He's playing Alec Burks. He's playing the vets. You had to know that that was going to be the case. You had to know that he was not going to be the one to just give Cam Reddish 25 minutes a night and see what he can do. That's just not the way Tibbs is wired. So, you know, it speaks of organizational confusion. There is not a clear agenda. At some points, they're doing the slow and steady rebuild, and they're trading picks for more picks, which is can always be a good thing, right? And we're drafting high. We've drafted well in places, although they did pass up Tyrese Halliburton when they picked Obi Toppin.
Mm-hmm.
But then at other times they're making these win now moves, and it's just really I don't think they have a clear, coherent vision. And if they do have one, they've never bothered to explain it to their fans.
Yeah, and it does seem to change, as you point out. Last offseason, it seemed all about keeping cap space is no longer the end thing. It's all about short-term contracts that we're going to be able to trade for a superstar. And then suddenly this summer, it's having to trade draft picks to get rid of those what were supposed to be very tradable short-term contracts, only to be able to get some cap space to sign a free agent. It just seems like there are changes in direction that go from year to year. So not a clear strategy, but then again, these are the Knicks, and as I said, I think we grade on a curve in terms of expectations. Howard Beck, I so appreciate the time and you sharing the knowledge, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Always a pleasure, Lori. Thanks for having me.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.